when disaster strikes. Will you be ready?
Good evening, and we begin tonight with the monster hurricane and its deadly impact already.
When all hope is gone, will the government be there for you? If you're looking for ways to take your prepping to the next level, then you've come to the right place. Broadcasting from a secure and well-prepared location, it's time for Prepping 2.0. And now, please welcome authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Well, hello and welcome to Prepping 2.0. This is episode 7. A topic that affects all of us is a big deal. We talk about it a lot with people. Non-preppers who think they can come to you when SHTF comes around. Shelby, before we dive into that, what are some ways folks can get the show, connect with us, find out what's going on?
All right, listen up, folks. There's some great ways to connect with us, so grab a pen or be willing to hit rewind here. Great place to start listening and checking us out is at prepping2-0.com. That is our website. It is always a work in progress. Hats off to our web designer who is just trying to gather links, outside links, and pull it together and make it look good. It's always a work in progress. Another great place to connect with us is on Podbean. If you go to podbean.com, look up Prepping 2.0, you can find us there. You can find our past episodes there. You can also connect with us through Patreon and support us. If you like what you hear and you want to toss us a few shekels and help us out and help us keep the lights on, that's a great place to do it.
Exclusive content.
Yeah,
Patreon exclusive stuff.
Get stuff that only they get. What's really cool is there's already some great people that are already supporting us there, and a huge thanks to them because it helps do this whole website thing, getting all put together and all that helps with everything, helps with our production costs, all of that. Thank you, and hope you stay with us. The other thing you can connect with on Podbean and soon the website is PrepperNet. And we'll talk about this a little bit today, how to connect with other preppers in your area so that you can kind of fortify and get better at your preps and fill in gaps with each other. You can connect there from the Podbean page. Love that. Coming soon to iTunes. Stay tuned for that. That's one of those work in progresses. The other cool one is YouTube. That's actually where we started posting our podcast and radio show. And just go there and look for Prepping 2.0. Utah. Hello, Utah listeners.
Hello, Utah listeners.
We love you because you listen to us on KYAH Radio, Utah's Talk Authority, and KNAK. Welcome. There's more radio stations to come. Facebook. Bunch of Facebook pages. We get busy with Facebook first. Prepping 2.0 podcast Facebook page. We'll be posting stuff there. We'll post episodes there. Glenn's Facebook page, 299 Days the Book. Kind of fun because we get kind of snarky and fun on our Facebook pages and just kind of bring the headlines to a prepping forefront. It's kind of fun. Shelby's, my Facebook page is Shelby Gallagher-author. Maddie Tate Gallagher, she is our dog that chews up everything in sight, but she takes cute pictures, so she has her own Facebook page. Our email newsletter, we send an email once a week. We don't spam you. You can sign up for Glenn's at 299days.com and mine, Shelby Gallagher's, at agreatstate.com. I think I covered it all.
That was awesome. Okay, well, we're going to start a new segment on this show. See how the show's developing and growing?
Yeah.
See how it's doing that? And this is something called 100 Things That Disappear First. Now, this is a list that's been all over the internet. It's fascinating. It's a list, I believe it originated with a survivor of the Bosnian Civil War. And
yeah,
it's a list of things that I believe it was she realized disappeared first. And it's a great checklist, not only of stuff to have on the material side, yeah, that's important, but also to think about why these things are important, because then you're going to fully grasp all the aspects of prepping.
And not only that, when that time comes, which I think it's when, not if, to be ready. Don't be surprised when
exactly.
You see these things dwindling.
Safety pins? What the heck? We're not covering that one today. But, well, why would you need safety pins? And then you listen to it and you go, oh, yeah, now I understand why you would. And the other thing is, if you can't get all 100 items on this list, which is reasonable that you couldn't, you at least know what you need to barter for.
Yeah.
And if there are things on this list that you have ample amounts of, you know that you can barter for them. So we're going to take it in numerical order. This link will be on the website. So there it is.
Eventually.
But you can seriously just – you kids, get on the Googles. Get on the Googles.
First 100 things disappear, SHTF. You'll find it.
That's right. Number one, generators. Oh yeah, look at California, the wildfires they're having. And we'll give a little brief description of this. Everybody knows about generators. Oh, they're too expensive. Actually, they're not. The prices have been falling.
They used to be really expensive.
They used to be because it was a little niche thing, and now a lot of people have them because a lot of people are waking up and realizing they need them. And there's two basic kinds. One is gasoline. The other is propane. I guess there's a third kind, which are both gasoline and propane. Mm-hmm. I'm a fan of having one of each. Gasoline is good because it's easier. I mean, you're going to have it around, but gasoline is one of the first things to go. And so there's that. Propane is an excellent, excellent. Should I do my Hank Hill imitation? Propane and propane accessories. There we go. But it's a great thing to have. It's easy to store. It's going to not run out as quickly as gasoline because people don't run cars on propane. And it is really an efficient way you can run on little barbecue things.
And you can get it in all kinds of sizes of tanks.
Sizes of tanks, yes. And then there's the best of both worlds, which is a combination they call dual fuel, gasoline and propane. Shelby, tell the listeners what we paid for an awesome, I'm going to say 9,000 watt, generator dual fuel at Costco.
Well, I'm gonna make myself look really good.
Please do.
Okay, so this was last summer.
Mm-hmm.
Summertime is a good time to buy generators because electricity isn't going out. It's not cold, and people are cool with that. So we were running around in Costco, and I caught my eye the generator you speak of. It's $200 off. It's normally, I believe, $600-$700.
It's $700. It was $499.
So you were keeping going forward with the cart, and I'm like, come back here. You need to see this.
By the way, can I pause you? Men, can I just say, this is the ultimate wife. She's like, hey, there are generators on sale. Let's get some. I'm like, oh my goodness.
You've died and gone to heaven. You're please. Welcome. So we sat there and had a discussion about how we would use these, where we would use these, and so we bought two. We did.
Great deal, and they store for a while. We're going to get some 100-pound fuel tanks and have these generators hook into the main fuse box and a bunch of other things. It's going to be great. Propane is cheap right now, $1.88 a gallon.
And I would say this, gosh, 4, 5, 6 years ago, these would have been well north of $1,000.
Oh, yeah.
Generators are coming down in price. During Thanksgiving Black Friday stuff, I was putting stuff out on our pages about Black Friday deals that I was seeing on Amazon. Several of them were generators. I predict around holiday season, you're going to see Black Friday deals. But as summer starts coming up, keep an eye out for them. That's when people don't need them. And that's
exactly.
When things, it's an off season, that's when you can get them. So keep your eyes out, yeah.
And what a great example of prepping 2.0.
Exactly.
We say it almost every show, but it's so fundamental. Prepping 1.0 is, oh, I need a generator. And you get a gasoline generator, maybe a Honda, which is a very
and
good generator.
And it's several thousand dollars.
And it's a lot of money, and you go, geez, or you think, oh, I need to get one, but I can't right now. That's the fast forward sound. Do you like that?
I do.
Fast forward sound to now when they're a lot cheaper. So anyway, there you go. That's item number one of the first 100 things to disappear after SHTF. Now we're going to get into our topic, which is, of course, non-preppers who think they can come over to your house when SHTF comes, how to maybe avoid that or how to maybe take advantage of that situation. I mean, I don't mean take advantage. I mean how to have it be a win-win.
Yeah,
have it be good.
That's a great way to win-win for everybody. So we have a great example to start with. I love this.
And before we do that, Shelby.
Okay, before we do that.
You've had about 2 pots of coffee. You're pretty amped up right now. I'd like to talk about PrepperNet because PrepperNet is a network out there of preppers in your area, and nobody knows who you are.
And how to connect with them.
Exactly. Unless you say, hey, I'm okay with this person connecting with me. It's all controlled. It's kind of like a dating website in the sense of, you know, there's like some controls on it. Like, I'm interested in meeting people. You're in the same area. And the electronic matchmaker makes it happen is basically how it goes. And so the reason I bring up PrepperNet, and there's links to them on the various websites, Podbean and elsewhere that Shelby mentioned, is that you can vet people now. We're going to break this discussion into pre-SHTF and then post-SHTF, but now, in peacetime, we can do a lot of things we won't be able to do when, you know, we're struggling to eat, basically. And so now, in peacetime, go onto PrepperNet, join PrepperNet. There's a free version, by the way.
Yeah.
There's a free version. Okay, so there you go. And start building up a team, or if you have a team, maybe start augmenting it. Now, here's the thing. I use the word team, and in people who've read or listened to my books know what that means. You know, it's the guys, it's Pow and Bobby and Scotty and Wes and me. It doesn't necessarily have to be a tactical team that we're talking about. It could be a family. It could be a mutual assistance group. I love that term. It's very descriptive. Mm-hmm. Or it could be a family or a neighborhood or something. So either get that team together or augment.
Well, and also to think about, I'm going to use the example in my books, in the community of Smoky Flats. If you read my book too, The Aftermath, how this community over here has a lot of livestock, but this community over here has something else. And the teaming up so that you can not take all their livestock resources, but you can share and barter and team up that way for resources.
Exactly. So start vetting people now. This team building process takes, I think, a number of years.
It does, because it's a building of trust.
You have to know people, and you can only observe them over time. And a lot of times, we're talking about one weekend a month. Maybe you go out and you train, or you can some food, or you do something together. Given that you're not spending a lot of time with people, it takes a longer period of time to get to know them. So you got to start doing that now. So we'll start off with the pre-SHTF situation. And we'll start off with people that we know. These are real live people that Shelby and I know, and also characters from the book, and they're the same thing because we wrote our books about real
many
live
times
people.
Based on real people.
And so I'd like to start off with describing a guy we'll call Brian. And Brian, friend of mine, now an ex-friend of mine, the details don't matter, and a guy who knows I'm a prepper, kind of had to know I was a prepper given the nature of our friendship. He needed to know. That's kind of a long story, but I'll leave it at that. I want to talk about the psychology of guys like Brian. Brian is a decent guy. Brian is a conservative. Brian is open to the idea that society can fall apart.
And he's like-minded with us.
Very like-minded.
Yeah. That's what's surprising about this more than anything.
Exactly. So he's not, you know, the grasshopper or the sheeple or all the other pejorative terms we use for people who are just checked out. And by the way, if somebody's checked out and they think that the only thing that matters is what kind of shoes Kim Kardashian's wearing, then just forget them.
You're not going to be friends.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So, but there's a psychological aspect. So he knows that he should probably prep, but it's kind of hard. It takes a lot
of
work.
It's inconvenient.
It takes time.
It costs money.
It takes money. In this case, his wife was opposed to this. Believe me, I know what that's like. Ex-wife, current wife is obviously very cool with this. And so it creates marital ruffles to go ahead and prepare like this. So the approach he took was, I call it nervous laughter in the books. It was nervous laughter. It was something like this. Hey, well, when everything falls apart, I can come to your house. Did I overdo the nervous laughter? I think I did.
I know who he is, so it's like, no, I can see it.
Yeah. So there's the nervous laughter. And the psychology is, I feel bad that I can't prep, so I'm going to try to leech off somebody else, and we're buddies, and it's going to all be cool. Isn't that right?
Yeah, he's trying to take advantage of your relationship.
Exactly. Exactly. So
You need to tell him the rest of that conversation, our listeners here.
So, yeah, this is part that it isn't in the book. So with the real Brian, I remember after several times he had basically said, I'm coming over to your house, and again with the nervous laughter, and I didn't pick up on what he was saying because it seemed so unbelievable to me that somebody would sit around and spend all their time and money on their own leisure and then expect me to save their life and their family's life.
Yeah.
It's kind of a big ask, got to be honest. It's kind of a big ask. And so I remember it finally boiled down to this.
Well, and for him to keep asking, you know, he's pressing a little
right.
bit.
Right. He put almost as much energy into trying to get my stuff as he could have put into getting his
exactly.
own stuff.
So he's asked a few times. And
he's
then,
asked a few times.
Then you bucked up.
And I said, listen, I said, look at me. And I pointed at him, and I made eye contact. And I said, it is June 2012, because that's when this happened. I said, when you come to my door, and want my stuff, I'm going to say to you, do you remember in June of 2012 when we had this conversation right here? Do you remember me looking you in the eye and saying, don't come to my house? And he said, well, what happens if I do? He's still not getting it. He doesn't want to get it. He understands it.
And he's trying to leverage.
It's, well, what happens if I come over? Because he knows where the cabin is. And I said, I'm going to turn you away. Well, what if I don't go? And I said, I'm going to pull a gun out. This is the abbreviated version of the conversation. And he said, well, what if I still don't go? I said, and his wife and his kids were there too.
And let me throw this in here. Your wives know each other. So he's not
my
just
ex-wife and his wife, yes.
You're not just, he's not just leveraging your friendship.
Yeah.
He's leveraging the wives too. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a little bit, even in my mind, a little bit more insidious.
Yep. And I said, you would need to go. And I've got a gun out at this point. And he said, well, basically, what are you going to do in front of my wife and kids?
Exactly.
I said, I'm going to tell them to close their eyes and cover their ears because I'm about to kill their dad in front of them. And he said, you wouldn't do that. And I said, yes, I would. And I said, so please don't put me in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
Please don't put me in that situation. Please prepare. Please show up with stuff and with the correct mindset. We'll get more of that in a moment. Please show up with something so I don't have to do something awful. And here's the selfish thing. You think it's selfish enough for somebody to want to leech off of you as a prepper and come and get all your stuff even though they didn't do any work. Okay, that's selfish 1.0. Let me tell you what selfish 2.0 is.
Jeez.
Making me...
Yeah, the bad guy.
...have to potentially kill somebody, which I don't want to do. That is selfish to put me in that position. So I explained it that way, and I still just got this kind of glazed look. So that, by the way, is one way that I suggest approaching this. Have an extremely clear conversation. Eye contact and pointing fingers, and do that thing about the date.
Yeah.
That where you lay it out and say, remember this conversation, because that's what I think it's going to take. Shelby, what are some examples of this that you've run into?
Well, I think the one that really, I knew that this was something on people's minds. And I'm going to go back to, it was a year and a half ago, you and I went to a prepping conference in Kennewick, Washington. We're talking about books. We're talking about, at that time, up and coming, the first book in my series coming out. Questions from the audience dominated this.
Yes.
What do you do when the person comes to your door that's not prepared, knows to prepare now and isn't? And I feel bad looking back. I answered as best as I could at the time. But looking back now and knowing the conversation we're about to have here on this show, I could give a better answer. But it's like, you can't. You cannot take in every sob story. You can't. At some point, you need to have in your mind who can come and who can't. And that's about as far as we went. But it was obvious to me this is something that bothers people. And we talk about, we bring up examples of this in your books, but also my books are almost wrapped around this very concept. Book one is my main character, Julie, negotiating with someone the bug out location and the prepping. She's negotiating for them.
And by the way, not to quibble.
You hate it when I use that
word. I hate
the
term negotiate because to me, and I'm a lawyer, it means like
give and take.
Ridiculous demands and bringing down and blah, blah, all that kind of business negotiation stuff. I know what you mean, and you don't mean that. You mean planning out
with the person. Use this conversation now to plan out and make it so that it's mutually beneficial instead of having to say no and turn people away. Now, we're going to get more into this. The other one, though, is book two. Book two, I'm not going to give away any spoilers, but the entire story wraps around how to bring in an unexpected person into your fold. And what does that look like after the collapse? And we'll talk about that more in the second half of this show. But I think so much of the story that I wrote is around this very concept. So there's ways around it. I think I can give a better answer today than I gave in Kennewick. So, but you gave the example of Brian in book one or in your books. Are there any others that I think there's lots in your books that there's always that person who just is like, government will take care of this, you know? And they don't.
Exactly. And we're going to sprinkle in some of my book character examples
good.
in the other parts of this, because we're going to talk later on about people you already know after. And so post-SHTF,
we'll be after
people
the break.
You know that come to your door. And then when the collapse is happening, people that you don't know. And I've got examples of that to sprinkle in. So you really hit on this topic of planning out in advance.
Yeah.
People, this is obviously advanced, this is pre-collapse, people coming out, and you know, who can come is one of the classic things. Who can come? Can't bring, you know, grandma. And by the way, pets are going to be a big thing.
Yep.
Can I bring my pets? I'm going to be honest, no. Unless it's, we've already got, you know, Maddie the Wonder Dog, who's awesome for barking when, you know, anybody comes by. So we're covered on dogs.
Yeah.
And so that's a big deal. That's going to be a big deal.
And especially animals that have no utility. Don't bring your parakeet.
Yeah.
I don't bring your iguana. These are high maintenance animals that require a lot of care, that cost money and resources. Now, if you bring a dog that has some, you know, like some hunting skills and retrieving sort of skills, okay, now we're talking, because they're earning their keep, and it goes for people too. Yeah.
Yeah. Another thing to think about, and this is again the pre-collapse, the negotiation, mm-hmm. as Shelby mentioned. Who can come? One of the variants of that is, okay, your family member, your teenage son can come. Let's say that's a thing. You're talking to another family. I can tell you what the teenage son's next question is going to be. Can my girlfriend come? And then see how you have to start having these discussions.
Yes.
Now, as opposed to the girlfriend being on your front step, and you've got, unfortunately, an AR-15 pointed at somebody, which we don't want to have happen.
Mm-mm.
And so think about the girlfriend thing and the parents thing. Everybody's going to be like, oh, my parents, they need to come. See, because a lot of people out there view you, the prepper, as their ticket to solving all of their problems, not just their problems, their family's problems. And it could get crazy. It could be like, well, my neighbor's a really great guy. He's got a ham radio license. Oh, his family needs to come. It's like, stop. Nope, we're not doing that. But we're having this conversation now. So it's not just who can come. What about materiel?
Well, and I mean, so, and also too, I think I'm going to step back, decide, can they come, yes or no, and whatever comes with them. In that yes or no, is this someone you can get along with?
Big.
Because you're going to be under the same roof with them in a very high stress situation. Can you get along with them? If you can't now, guarantee you, it's not going to happen. Is this someone that you can work as a team with?
Exactly.
That's,
and again,
a big one.
These are people that you know, so you're going to know the answer to that. If somebody said, I'm going to bring my neighbor, you know, well, you don't know the neighbor. Don't let the neighbor come because you don't know him, is
right.
The point. Yeah, these are people. And by the way, you said it well. Little things now that bug you about somebody are going to become big things.
Yeah.
Especially if somebody or their kids or their husband or wife are kind of lazy.
Especially.
No, that's going to be a big problem, because when you're working 20 hours a day and you're hungry and tired and sleep deprived and somebody's sitting on the couch, you're going to lose your mind, and
yeah.
Nobody needs that kind
yeah.
of stuff. Then, so yeah, tell them the expectations, it sounds like.
So yeah, so if you say yes to them, tell them the expectations. Because so here's the yes. This is somebody who, okay, yes, this is pre-collapse. Can I come? It's the Brian question. And you go through this mini checklist in your mind, yes. Now is when the discussions begin. Okay, if you come, this is my expectations for coming. You can't just come and expect, you know, a three-course meal every 6 hours or whatever. You need to come with ammo, firearms, clothing, food. You need to lay out a basic expectation. If they can't bring that because of whatever reason, hey, that's mutually put together, those food supplies in locations, and then you can start from that way. Again, going back to book one, Julie, my main character, I need to prep my bug out location. She has a discussion with her dad. They agree to do it, and they prepare the bug out location together. Very similar to that.
And by the way, if somebody that wants to come and join you can't show up with a U-Haul truck, you know, full of MREs, there's another way to do this. It's called money.
Yeah.
It's pretty universal.
Yeah.
What? How about this? I need $100 a month to build up the food reserves at this place you want to come to.
For your family.
For your family. If at any time you want, like, your money back, I will give you the stuff. You'll have to come and pick it up. See how this is a very practical, almost a business-like transaction. It's not, oh, yeah, you're nice and everyone in your neighborhood can come visit me. Because here's the thing. Let's say you have food for a year for a family of four. If everybody and their dog comes over, you have food for 45 minutes. That's
yeah.
how quickly stuff goes. And so You got to have these very practical things. And here's the thing. Don't be afraid to say, I need $100 a month from you. Because you know what? That $100 is going to go for a ton of beans and rice. We're going to, I'll vacuum seal them. I'll keep it here. Blah, blah, blah.
You're putting, we'll label it with your, with a, whatever way to label it for your family.
Exactly. It is not asking a lot. One of the things when you're in one of these discussions pre-collapse that you as nice people out there, because I'm guessing most of you listening are nice people, you're probably not going to say, hey, I need $100 a month. That's not how you talk to your quote friends. Mm-hmm. It needs to be, because this is serious business. This isn't just hanging out. This isn't just who's going to pick up the tab at Buffalo Wild Wings. Okay, this is serious stuff. And so don't be afraid to use cash that way and structure it that way.
Yep.
So that's what you need to do.
So I want, we have a couple minutes here before the break. Here's a really good example of that. And this is a story that I had engaged with somebody. Oh, gosh. It's been about 2 years ago now. Young gal, mid-20s, highly professional, super nice gal. And
extremely intelligent.
Very smart. And having a meal with her and another woman. And I need to give, we have too many women here, so we need to, okay. So my young professional, let's name her Susie. Talking to her, talking about collapse, stuff hitting the wall, and things falling apart. And she was like, I really have nothing. I mean, I'm fresh out of college. I really have nothing. And I said to her, well, if you do join, if you're able to find a community or a family to that will take you in, you need to bring something. You need to bring something that, whether it be skills or supplies of some kind, well, what could that be? I said, this is Christmas season, great time of year to get ammo super cheap, bricks of 22, things like that, or anything like that. 9mm, 22, I would recommend. Okay, she says, so I'll just go get a brick of 22, and then I'll knock on someone, you know, because she knows people that are in the prepping community. She goes, and I'll just bring my brick of 22. I'm like, you are not getting it.
This is not a dinner party where you say, I'll bring a salad.
Yes.
This is not. That's pre-collapse. That's polite, normal, good society. And we're talking about planning for the end of the world.
This
so
is not it's a potluck.
Different. This is not a potluck.
And then what was really sad is the other woman that was at the table, who is more my age and is definitely a prepper type, bleeding heart that she is, oh, don't worry about it, Susie. You can just come over to my place. And I'm like, oh, honey.
Oh, so you'll all die together now.
And not only that, if you're willing to say this to this person and basically excuse her to not have to prep now when it's the easiest to do it, oh, the people that are me coming to your door. And we'll talk about that more, what post-SHTF is like. But, oh, I'm done. I'm done with this conversation. Can we get the tab for lunch? Because this is not how this is supposed to work.
Exactly. So we're going to go out to break. And when we come back, we'll talk about this question. After a collapse, people you know coming to your door and people you don't know coming to your door. Stay tuned. This is some good information.
We'll be right back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate right after this.
The Operator G1 is a full-featured rugged comm solution designed for the Midland MX-T100 and 105. Designed and manufactured in the USA, the Operator is an all-in-one support platform for two-way wireless communication for civilians. Using the GMRS bands, there is no ham license required and no test needed for operation. Ideal for preppers, hunters, homesteaders, ranchers, and people just like you. Waterproof when closed, this rugged system houses the Midland radio, microphone, and antenna, providing an always-ready, always-charged grab-and-go solution for emergencies or events, as well as an ideal solution for a base station or vehicle use. Powered by a 60Ah internal battery, the Operator recharges quickly and easily using the supplied AC charger, the internal solar controller, or directly from a vehicle. If you recognize the value of wireless communication with or without grid power, the Operator G1 is an award-winning solution that allows simple, one-button communication when it counts. Our 2-year warranty, quality materials, and first-class assembly technicians deliver a high-value solution when you need to be sure you can get your comms up. To learn more, go online to portableuniversalpower.com.
Do you need a custom Kydex holster or magazine holder? Glenn Tate's favorite custom holster and mag holder maker is Northwest Retention Systems. You can select your holster or mag holder color, including the I Miss America logo, and Northwest Retention Systems will custom make yours. While you're at it, look into the Scout Chest Rig Holster. Glenn loves his for vehicle operations and for fishing. Made by a young craftsman supporting a growing family of young patriots, Northwest Retention Systems products are 100% American-made with no foreign parts. Find out more online. Online at NorthwestRetentionSystems.com.
PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Looking to meet other like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own prepper group? Already have a group? Join PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet has gathered the biggest names in the industry to help unite preppers everywhere. Join John Jacob Schmidt, Scott Hunt, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, Glenn Tate, Shelby Gallagher, Charlie Hogwood, Samuel Culper, Survivor Jane, Rick Austin, Franklin Horton, Ryan Mitchell, and Brian Duff. Our team is united. Check us out at PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. PrepperNet.com.
All right, preppers, we'd like to take this moment and recognize some of our great sponsors. So let's see, looks like this segment is available. Yep, this space is available for you. It's reserved for a patriot, prepper, freedom-loving company who has a product that would interest our listeners and would be proud to partner with us. To reserve your ad space, contact Shelby Gallagher at shelbygallagher321@gmail.com. That's shelbygallagher321@gmail.com.
Prepper Press is a small, independent publisher of survival nonfiction and post-apocalyptic fiction. At PrepperPress.com, you'll find a variety of books to guide you on your journey to prepare for a compromise to the electrical grid, natural disasters, economic collapse, political strife, or similar scenarios that could disrupt life as we know it. You'll also discover fictional yet believable stories about what happens to society when everything falls apart. To learn more, visit Prepper Press online at PrepperPress.com.
And we're back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
And we are back, the second half of episode 7. This is going to be the half where we talk about the situation of people coming over to your house who are not prepared after the collapse, post-SHTF. By the way, a note, if there's an excessive rule of law situation, that means an oppressive government that's running around doing bad things. In those situations, before anybody comes over to your house, and this includes you in your own house, get rid of your phones. I'm not a conspiracy theorist or anything, but it is very easy for an oppressive government, if that's the threat we have, and it may not be, by the way. There may be no government left. I mean, the government, they all may have gone home to be with their families, so that may not be an issue. You can turn your phone off. It's still trackable. Trust me on this. So if you're in an excessive rule of law situation, everybody's phones get like thrown in a lake. And that's just what you have to do. You know, there's the classic story in my books of the teenage kid at a very secure location who opens up his phone, turns his phone on because he wants to text his girlfriend. And well, what happens, I'm not going to, no spoilers.
But it's in danger.
Big problem. So the first of the two categories, post-SHTF, we're going to talk about are people you know, you already know, to varying degrees of kinship and acquaintance. And then the next category will be people you don't know, complete strangers. So on the question of people you know coming to you after a collapse, you mentioned something earlier in the first half that was brilliant. I don't think people think about enough, and that is people leveraging the relationship they have with you or the relationship they had in the past. Expand on that, because I see that as a huge problem. A lot of preppers aren't seeing. They're going to be surprised by it, and we prepare so we're not surprised.
Right. So, and we use the example of your friend Brian and how he was in those discussions. He's leveraging, oh, you know me, you'll let me in, I know you. And how many times do we say that in our lives? Or it's like, oh, don't worry about it, I know her, she'll let you go, she'll invite you to the party, she'll whatever. And that's great in a social situation. Post SHTF, hey, no more garden parties, you know what I mean? Invitations mean nothing. And I can see those former relationships or ones that have really cooled down, I can see, oh yeah, we went to high school together. Oh yeah, yeah, our kids play basketball together. I can see those very tenuous strings of relationships suddenly, oh my gosh, they're going to try to be leveraged because of that. Yeah,
go ahead. What I find interesting is what you just described, take the our kids play basketball together. That's a pre-collapse normalcy bias thing. Oh, the world's all, oh, it's all about people playing basketball and parents picking up kids and buying pizza for the guys after the basketball game. That's not the world we're living in. And those people, that those grasshoppers, those unprepared people, I don't know if it's malicious necessarily. They just don't know what else to do.
Right.
And the first thing that pops in their mind was, oh yeah, there's that Glenn and Shelby couple, and they like whatever, they had a bunch of canned goods or whatever. They're gonna think that's their easy solution, and some of it's malicious, but some of it necessarily isn't. But you're right, leveraging past relationships is gonna be a big deal.
I think it is, and it's gonna be all kinds of them. They're gonna, so think, it's kind of, I would say, do a mental kind of inventory. I would say ex-wives, I would say ex-spouses, I would say cousins. These past relationships where you haven't had any contact for a while, but maybe it cooled off and it was still friendly, or, you know, I don't know. I think kind of do a mental inventory. I mean, I talk about in my books kind of the immediate people, who is definitely that we know is going to show up. Then I think we're going to also have our surprises too.
Yeah, and there's going to be the predictable people showing up, you mentioned, people you have some connection with, and then the surprises. And these are people you kind of know. I could see this happening. I don't know how often, but I've thought about this happening as a possibility. What if you know some people who are preppers?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they're like medium preppers or sort of light preppers, preppers 1.0
yes.
maybe. And then all of a sudden they show up and you're a little surprised by this because you thought they were squared away. Well, maybe they're not being bad people. Maybe they're showing up to augment your group. Maybe it's all good. Maybe it's all good for all we know. But maybe it's people who have prepared a little bit, and maybe that's how they know you're a prepper, because you've used
right.
words around them like, well, when SHTF, which is always code for like that you're a prepper, and they might start showing up.
Let's just say this, SHTF, we should probably said this earlier, stands for when stuff hits the fan.
Correct, yeah.
When things go bad, collapse happens, yes.
Exactly, exactly. And so there'll be some surprise folks that you know, and so be prepared. I mean, I know it's sort of cliche
to say,
yeah, but expect the unexpected. And then one of the things I think you need to do with people you know, especially people you don't know, which we'll get to, with people you know, reject most of them. I know that's callous, but we were just talking about this, the pre-SHTF and negotiating.
They should have known better by now.
Here's the thing. You don't owe anybody anything. Shelby, we don't talk about religion. You and I are Christians. We consider ourselves devout Christians, and we live it. We have a moral obligation to help as many people as we can, and we love that. By the way, doing this podcast is one of the ways we carry out the mission that we believe we've been assigned, and we gladly accept this mission. But you can't do very much for very many people. And I remember when I first started prepping and first got to know the team, Scotty, he pulled me aside, and I could tell the team had talked about it in advance, and we were at the range, and he said, you know, Glenn, you kind of want to save a lot of people that maybe can't be saved. Mm-hmm. And he was bringing up a very valid team concern that I was out there to help as many people as possible.
Save, you know, the world.
Goodwill mission. I'm going to, like, you know, feed the hungry and clothe, and which I really want to do. But when we're talking about the scenarios we're talking about, unless you have, honestly, millions of dollars, you can't save very many people, you know, if any. And so you need to get that thought out of your mind. Now, help all the people you can, emphasis on you can.
Yeah.
That's the limiting factor. Because if you've got a year's worth of food for four people, like I said, and you invite everybody and their dog, it's going to last about 45 minutes. You're all dead.
Yeah, then you're all dead, and then you're a good-to-no-one. And I will say this, too. Someone comes to my door, and they're asking me specifically for food. and I have to go through this mental exercise with yourself. I have my stockpile of food, and I am now taking food out of that stockpile that has my kid's name on it. I'm handing it to this person who didn't prep. That ain't happening. Mm-hmm. That is not happening. I'm not taking food away from my kids and their potential survival to give to somebody who pre-SHTF knew better.
Exactly.
If they know me, they knew better. And I would say those light preppers, too. It's interesting because I know that everyone's on a different kind of journey to prepping, and you're never 100% there. But having a really awesome pantry is not prepping. It's the start. It's better than nothing. But I've met a couple of preppers who are like, yeah, here's and it's a pantry. It's, you know, a couple dozen cans of food and some spices and some pasta. That's enough to get you through a week. You need to think of food supplies. You hear me talk about 30, 60, 90 days, up to a year. These are things that you all need to be thinking about. We all need to be thinking about.
And what she just described about the light prepper and the pantry is a perfect illustration of prepping 1.0. Yeah. And now we're at 2.0. Now we're at the point where people are coming to our doors. And how do you handle it? Mm-hmm. One way to be generous and still not have somebody eat all of your food and all of your kids' food.
Yes.
You know, that balance we were talking about, the you can that I mentioned in help everyone if you can. And that's put people to work. Now, this assumes you have enough food to put people to work. It assumes you have work that needs to be done, which I think is a pretty safe bet. You know, you're going to be fortifying things for tactical reasons, among other things. You might be walking half a mile with a gallon of water to move some water where it needs to be. There's going to be a lot of work. We covered that in Prepper Fit about how everything's going to take more work. You can put people to work and they can earn some food. Now, this assumes you have enough food. You have a surplus of food. One of the ways that could happen, depending on the time of the year, it could be summer or fall, and you could have a ton of fruit, for example, and you need some help canning it. So we're all about helping people, but just not giving your stuff away. So always keep that in mind. Keep in mind, number one, that you can put people to work, and that might work, might help them. But also bear in mind when you're thinking of all of that, that there's going to be a lot more physical, low-tech, low-skill work to do than you currently think.
Chopping wood.
Exactly. That kind of stuff.
Yep.
So here's a problem with people that you know coming to your house after a collapse is that they can leave and tell other people that you have stuff. And you're saying, well,
huge security issue.
Huge security problem. Well, why would anybody do that? Well, there are a variety of reasons. Maybe they don't like working, quite honestly. They don't like chopping wood.
And it could be an innocent, I was just up the road at the so-and-so's house, and they fed me. It was great.
Yeah, I mean, they got a bunch of peaches. We canned a bunch of peaches.
Yeah.
They have a whole garage full of canned peaches there. The other thing is, if there is a excessive rule of law situation, or I think more likely a gang situation, if there's some bad power out there, the bad powers will want people to not even rat out people with food. They're going to say, the bad people, I'm going to fix you up, you know, hot meal. When was the last time you had a complete meal, a bath or something? That could be a big deal. So tell me about these people and hungry people who need food might sell you out. And it's not necessarily malicious. Sure, they're going to be bad malicious people. By the way, the bad malicious people are probably in the gangs already.
Right.
But the population we're talking about are just people that, geez, if I only had those Pop-Tarts, my kids would quit crying. They've been crying for 4 months. I can't take it anymore. I'm going to tell that warlord who has Pop-Tarts about these nice people who have all these canned peaches.
Possibility. And they'll justify it in their mind. Oh, it's just canned peaches. What's the difference? No, it's their lives. It's not canned peaches is the least of the concerns in that situation. Someone's the security of what you have.
Exactly. So those are some thoughts about people you know. Well, here's the next level of problem.
This is going to be interesting. I'm loving how this is going to go. We got a lot to talk about here.
This is the big problem. People you don't know coming to your door and wanting stuff. I would start off by saying be extremely picky. I even think
your default should be no.
Exactly. I was just thinking that word, default. Default is no. You probably can't learn enough about somebody to know, number one, that they're compatible, number two, they're not going to sell you out, and number three, that they have skills or equipment. You can't learn that in like a 45-second interaction on the front porch. This is why you start now in peacetime and you vet people and you get on PrepperNet and you get a group exactly. together and you do all this now and you spend 1 month or 1 weekend a month going out and hanging out and shooting and doing social stuff with your mutual assistance group. This is why you learn this stuff now, so you're not trying to do it on the doorstep.
And this is why you're not Susie, the young professional that I was telling you about. She's like, I'll just show up to someone's house with a brick of ammo.
Yeah.
Because you are unknown to those people. And a brick of ammo is like, it's like bringing a packet of ketchup to a barbecue. Not enough. Right.
Exactly. One of the things we talked about in episode 3, which I think was one of the best episodes we've ever done, is an amazingly important topic. And that's how men and women
yes.
will treat each other in the collapse. And one of the topics was men don't think that damsels in distress, particularly attractive younger ones, coming to your door, don't think, oh, this is great, I just got a girlfriend, you know, for one MRE I can have a girlfriend kind of thing. This is particularly true of men. Do not think that's going to work out well. And if you wonder why, go ahead and listen to episode 3, because mm-hmm. we covered that pretty clearly. But that will be a big problem.
And that's a weak point. Truly, for men, that's a weak point.
Exactly. It is a very weak point, and it's going to lead to nothing but badness. One of the things with people you don't know, and I call this the Shanghai conundrum. What? Rewind. Did he say Shanghai conundrum?
It's interesting, and we have some time. I might even tell what I think of when I think of Shanghai, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, it's a term, and this is covered in the book because it was actual military problem for the Special Forces group that was mm-hmm. out at Pierce Point. And that is the Shanghai, which is a historical reference. Back in the old days, the British Navy, I understand, would just grab people. Like yeah. Americans or whatever, French or Indonesians or whatever, just grab people. And it was called Shanghai because I think they went to Shanghai or something, or they grabbed them in Shanghai. And it was basically, now you're part of the British Navy, whether you like it or not. For the rest of your life.
Well, and here's where I come up with this, and we have a few minutes. I think this is interesting. Portland, Oregon, it's a port. Historically, 100 or so years ago, when it was really predominantly just a port, it was a port with a bunch of bars because that's how it works. There's an underground actual tunnel system in Portland, Oregon, and you can take tours of them. But 100 years ago, 100 plus years ago, when it was just a simple port of sailors, sailor would go get drunk and wake up on a boat going to China.
Yep.
He just got Shanghai'd is what it is. And so that's what can, with keep your wits about you, don't get drunk, don't be circumspect. So that's the whole idea, kind of getting this head fake done on you, and the consequences are the rest of your life. So how does this tie in?
And the reason it's a conundrum is the Shanghai conundrum is somebody comes to your door, and let's say for whatever reason you can trust them, which I highly question that you could possibly know this, but they've got some amazing skill. By the way, maybe it's not just you evaluating this. Maybe you're part of, say, a group like the Pierce Point community. And there were a lot of people in my books that came to Pierce Point that had military backgrounds. There was a military unit formed there, about 100 people. And so it's not just you relying on whether you can vet this person and you can control this person. You got 100 other dudes that if this person, you know, is going to be a problem. You've got 100 people that can observe it and can deal with it. So the conundrum is once these people come to your community or family or whatever it is, they can't leave.
Nope.
They ain't leaving, because here's what's not going to happen. Oh, hey, I'm a veterinarian and I got a bunch of vet medicine and I can treat humans. Oh, this is great. We just scored a doctor. Awesome. That person is with you for 2 or 3 weeks. And then for whatever reason, they want to go, and much like we talked about earlier, they can't leave. You're not leaving, so you now have a choice. Are you going to shoot them? I hope you don't. I mean, but you can't let people leave and tell you, because here's the thing. Information about where the preppers are and what they have is going to be gold. It's going to be more valuable than gold. People all day long are going to talk about who's got what. I heard that this house over there has Pop-Tarts. I'm not kidding. I'm not trying to be funny. It is going to be, there's no TV, there's no news, there's no video games, there's no NFL. All people are going to do all day long as their stomachs grumble is talk about, oh, I heard those people down there, they have all this food. By the way, most of these rumors will be false.
Right.
So you have to understand that anybody leaving your control with information is a threat to you. And you have to, in advance, think about it now. That's the other part of prepping 2.0 is we try to think these things out now. You need to say, okay, if I accept this person, I have to prevent them from leaving. I have to control them. That's hard to do. We're all nice people. We don't want to boss people around. We don't want to enslave people. That's not what we do. People can't leave. And it's not enough to say, well, welcome to our interview about whether you can join our group. I see you have some medical skills and supplies. Just to let you know, you can never leave. You can't just, like, that can't be all you do on the Shanghai conundrum. You've got to do more, which is mentally be prepared to shoot somebody in the back as they're leaving. I don't know that I can do that. Well, I probably could if it...
Well, I'd zip tie to a chair, but I have a thing for zip ties.
You do have a thing for zip ties. People will read book two and understand what we're talking about.
What's another risk that comes with, though, having these people you don't know come?
Disease. This is
a big deal.
This is a huge deal. It's a big deal now in peacetime. Candidly, our southern border, people are coming in with all kinds of diseases that we had eradicated, tuberculosis being the easiest one. Some types of hepatitis, too, are coming in. But that's with sort of normal healthcare standards. They're coming from third world countries, so it's not first world healthcare standards.
Well, that's why when you travel, you have to get all the shots.
Exactly. Exactly.
We're not going to have the luxury during a collapse.
And during a collapse, you're going to have untreated water. You're going to have cholera. You're going to have all kinds of waterborne illnesses that are going to be horrible. There's going to be, with malnourishment and a lack of sleep, there's going to be colds and flus on steroids.
And weakened immune systems.
Weakened immune system. Stress alone, even without the malnourishment, stress is an amazing weakener on your immune system. How many times have you been stressed out in your life and then all of a sudden you get sick?
Super sick.
So disease is going to be a huge problem. Well, that doesn't even factor in the possible scenario of a pandemic, which obviously, if we're in a pandemic situation, somebody wants to come into your group.
Heck no.
Yeah, exactly. So disease is a really big problem. And how can you know in your 45-second, porch doorstop interview whether somebody has tuberculosis?
You can't. Well, and here's the thing, and let's just put this out there. I think about a couple of years ago when Ebola is coming back again, but it's not in the news like it was because it was really politicized a couple of years ago because of open borders and all that. But the best way to stop disease spreading is to quit moving, quit allowing the movement of people and to people to come onto your within your sphere. I mean, that is it. People need to quit moving and stay still and protect what they have. I mean, that's just number one disease, especially pandemic control. Unfortunately, we live in a really global society where people aren't hopping on flights all the time and sneezing and things like that. Yeah.
Oh, exactly. And so we covered informants and collaborators a little bit earlier with the people you know, but that is still, that's an even bigger concern with people you don't know.
Right.
Even bigger concern with that. Well, one point that I'd like to really highlight is dealing with this decision-making process, dealing with this conversation that we're having. People need to deal with this in their own minds now. And it should take a little while for you to work this out and to process this, because I'm assuming people listening to us are good, decent people. And it's hard for them to talk about shooting people in the back who are about to sell them out. That's just not how we nice people operate. But you need, and it should take a while. By the way, this conversation that I've had, and I've come 180. I was Save the World. And I, as you can tell, I'm not anymore. it takes a while. And so now tell us, Shelby, about, have you had an evolution? Have you had a journey on this? Tell us about that.
And I think it really, that starting point on that for me was the Kennewick thing. I didn't realize how hard that group, that particular group of people, and I'd say there's like 50 plus people, 100 in that room, just really struggling with this. And what I see, I think the bottom line, well, let me answer your question. I think I've come around full circle. One, in writing my books and writing how to, I know you hate the word negotiate, plan out. If somebody comes to you now pre-collapse and says, I want to come to your place when a collapse happens, you can gently say, no, that's not possible right now because you're not prepared. You need to come. If you want to do that, we need to plan this out so that you come and everyone thrives, not everyone starves. And so here are things that I'd like you to, if you want to do that, that's fine, but let's work on a plan so it's mutually great for everybody and you can start playing so it's more of a team. And you can almost build your personal neighborhood network that way. But I think what people struggle with the most has got to be mean. You have, and not just, it's not just you're the mean in the tactical way, you're going to put a bullet in them, but mean in that, no. You can't come. No. No. And I think of the conversation you had with Brian. That was a hard conversation because it's someone who's a friend. No, you're not coming. I have put in a lot of time, effort, and strife to do this. You're not coming and taking advantage of that. And I think all of us who prep need to, we all feel the cost. It costs us money. It costs us time. It costs us energy that we could be spending, you know, doing other more fun things. So it's hard to be the person who says no. It's hard to be the mean guy. I think that's at the core of it. What people struggle with the most is they don't want to have to say no. And you're going to have to say no more than once. You're going to have to say it over and over again. It is a very small list of people that are going to be able to come to your place. And I think it's 10 times more important now to connect with other preppers. And PrepperNet's a great way to do that.
You know, I was just going to say, connecting with other preppers, here's another reason to do that. We were talking about how you evolve and how you have this moral discussion with yourself and how you mm-hmm. prepare yourself, you steel yourself to making hard decisions. Talk to other people about this. This is a conversation topic. Like I mentioned, when the team came to me and basically said, your approach is wrong and here's why. This is a group discussion. I say everybody needs to decide how they're going to do this mm-hmm. and evolve in their own minds. I don't mean to imply all by yourself. This is a and if you are a religious person, perhaps, and you can trust your clergy member, maybe a discussion that way, although probably it's a bad idea to be blabbing in church about how you're a prepper, but in some churches everybody's a prepper
there's denominations out there that make it a focus, which I think is admirable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so talk to other people about this because you better do it now. And
it's so much easier to do it now because you can go to the store and buy these things. We have the internet. You can order these things online, right?
So yes, exactly. A lot of what we've just been saying has sort of been dwelling on the dark and the negative. Mm-hmm. I will say this on the positive side. That is, there will be some people that come to your community, whether you've known them in the past or not, that will be amazing additions. They will be assets. And I don't want people to overdo what we're saying.
Right.
And we said that your default is turn them away and you should almost never accept people. I believe that. But understand that there are going to be some people that can help you. And also, and we try not to be religious on this show, but I will say this, I think the way God acts, he would put people who can help you and your group in your pathway. And don't be too quick to turn them away, because if objectively speaking, it makes sense to have people, it makes sense to have people, because community is the only way to get through this.
Yeah.
Only way to get through
this. One person by themselves cannot prep enough.
Exactly. So don't categorically not let people in. Just be very, very careful. Oh, and here's another aspect of all of this. I mentioned talk to other people. Let's say you have a mutual assistance group. Number one, you need to have this conversation among all of you. Hugely important, because you can't be out free ranging and just doing it on your own. The group needs to decide as a group. And we only have a few seconds left, but this is one of the things in your books Smoky Flats. They decide who's gonna be allowed in, and it's a joint group decision because you find wisdom in numbers, and these people are affected by this.
And family members need to have a say on that as well.
Exactly, exactly. Well, we are just about at the end of this show. I can't believe how it flew by. Amazing topic. I think we've given some good thinking material out to folks. And we welcome you back. Please join us again. We will be back very soon with our next episode. Shelby, say goodbye to the folks.
Goodbye, folks. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate. All of the fun and easy prepping information heard on this podcast can be found online at prepping2-0.com. You can also find out more about Glenn's books online at 299days.com and about Shelby's books online at agreatstate.com. Until next time, be smart, be safe, and be prepared.